With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Boy, it comes around quick. Friday, though, we didn't have one last Friday because of the Easter weekend. But our political panel, usually every Friday morning, and this morning we're doing it again. And the original crew from the first show we did, Olivia Pearson, Cam Slater, Marty Gibson, with us today. Hi, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Do we treat this like some sort of reunion?
Well, it is.
We need the little tooters and, you know, ratchet things going.
You don't have full glasses. We should celebrate our reunion.
Yeah. I could get sound effects, make it sound like a party.
I got a big white Russian.
Oh, look at the dude.
Yeah, they like the dude. Far out, man.
White Russian this time of the morning. There's someone in the replays who can help, Olivia.
That's right. It's morning.
Those meetings just aren't working.
Let's start. First story. And Cam, I think first up, you've got a few things to say, because I think you've already had a few things to say online about the story. Helen Clark weighing in on the pandemic agreement or whatever holdup she's calling it. So she's really keen. She wants this. She wants it.
You know, I'm just sick of hearing from her. You know, I've got this saying that I won't support a republic for New Zealand until two people are dead. Jim Bolger and Helen Clark, because some fool will nominate either of them to be the president, and that's the last thing we need. But anyway, she's just decided that she wants to stick her oar in to this pandemic treaty that WHO has been pushing, that seems to be stalled because some sensible nations, New Zealand included, have basically told them to go hang themselves.
And would have gone the other way, though, if the government didn't change.
That's exactly right. If Labor had got back in, they would have frog marched us into that anti-democratic treaty. And, you know, that was one of Winston's promises that got him some votes. And they've done it. They've said, no, we're not going to do that. There's a bit of work to go through now, but you know that the globalists are squealing and are in pain when they line up Helen Clark and Jenny Shipley and Ban Ki-moon and Gordon Brown and Tony Blair and God knows how many other.
I've forgotten Gordon Brown existed.
Well, I think most people in the UK have too. But, you know, I thought it was ironic. It's not written in the Stuff article, but I thought to myself, that's really funny. Clark's gone banging on about this, and they've got Jenny Shipley as well. Of course, Jenny Shipley was the first woman Prime Minister of New Zealand, and Helen Clark contrived this, you know, fancy falsity that she was the first elected Prime Minister, and you know, that just shows how shallow she is. But I honestly just wish she had shut up. But on this one, you know, we've been right all along. You know, Reality Check Radio listeners have been imploring politicians to not do this. Kirsten Murphy, of course, was very vocal about this. So, you know, we don't want this. I think we've learned our lesson from the pandemic, that actually what the WHO did, which is what China wanted, didn't really work. And the proof in the pudding of that is Sweden. So,
well, and I mean, it's, you know, it's all based on this silly open letter, right? It's an open letter where, as Cam points out, all these has-beens, even some PM of Bulgaria in the 1990s, that have, you know, penned this open letter because they're not liking the fact that the pandemic treaty seems to have stalled. And I'm really glad to hear that it has stalled. But the text of the letter actually says, at the beginning, the public and private sectors must work together toward the public good. This global effort is being threatened by misinformation and disinformation. Among the falsehoods circulating are allegations that the WHO intends to monitor people's movements through digital passports, which they will, that it will take away the national sovereignty of countries, which it will, and that it will have the ability to deploy armed troops to enforce mandatory vaccinations and lockdowns. Well, we already had that. So all of these claims, says the letter, are wholly false, and governments must work to disavow them with clear facts.
Now, we saw all that. It all happened.
It did all happen.
Clear facts, exactly.
And I mean, this commie language, this public-private sectors must work together for the public good. What that really means is what we saw under COVID, where the public sector co-opted the private sector, you know, things like private businesses, private GP practices, et cetera, and slammed them all with punitive measures if they were not compliant, which sadly most were.
Mm. She uses equity a lot too. These are hardcore issues of equity.
Yeah.
I was listening to a truly great Jordan Peterson interview with Michael Schellenberger, you know, the author and journalist, and who was discussing the WPATH files, which is a whole other thing, which were leaked files from the World Professional Association of Transgender Health. But he was talking about childless women in politics and the danger they pose. He was saying maternal instinct is a very powerful instinct and the human species depends on it. But what does it look like when it pathologizes? You treat a one-year-old like a six-month-old or a five-year-old like a six-month-old, just given to whatever it wants right now and start to interfere with its development. That's where the devouring mother comes in, and that's very, very bad. That's how you make useless, entitled, narcissistic, privileged, dependent children who hate their parents. But there's something even worse which no one will talk about and no one will contend with. That maternal instinct is hyper-powerful and the defining characteristic of femininity. The question that our culture is facing now is, what happens when childless women enter the political arena and that instinct doesn't find its proper place? As far as I can tell, childless women infantilize everything. If that is true, we're in serious trouble.
Wow.
Yeah. And I agree with that completely. All these childless women in politics are absolutely toxic.
Well, Helen Clark's an example of that.
Mm. What struck me, though, with this open letter signed by Helen Clark and all the other has-beens, is the sentence at the end, which says, "We call on leaders of all countries to step up their efforts and secure an effective pandemic accord by May. A new pandemic threat will emerge, and there is no excuse not to."
How come they always are certain that that's going to happen?
That constant spoken threat, you know, just means that they're planning one, and that the WHO treaty is not yet in place to roll out the full lockstep of fascism that these totalitarians want, and they're panicking. Like what Cam was saying, they're really livid. Which is, you know, translated as panicking in my book, especially with Trump looking like he'll win the election in America. And he stated over and over again that he will take that country right back out of anything to do with the WHO.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Argentine president as well, who's done the same thing. Yeah, you know, I mean, Christopher Luxon's been banging on about how great his 100-day plan was. Well, he should have a look at the president of Argentina's 100-day plan, because that was like freaking awesome.
I have a look and I see all I see is his hair.
The hair's,
I don't know about that.
Hair and the chainsaw. Like
that. Oh, it's hilarious. Hilarious. But didn't he close the central bank?
No, he passed a law saying if anybody in the central bank proposes to increase the money supply, that they'll be prosecuted and sent to prison.
Wow, goodness.
he's actually reduced inflation from being triple digit, annual inflation being triple digit, you know, over 100% to down to like 35%.
Yeah, it's the first 70% that's easy.
Yeah. So, you know, need more people like that to stay. There'll be a military coup, no doubt, supported by some, you know, globalist power that doesn't want to have these people actually experiencing their freedom.
Yeah, and the CIA will help.
The quote in the Stuff story that we're referring to, with Helen Clark, from her, shows how far away groups are. She says that it's almost incomprehensible. No resolution has been reached. Almost incomprehensible.
That's the panic, isn't it? That's the little catch, the tell on the panic. It's not incomprehensible as well. What they call misinformation and disinformation is rational dissent to fascism. Do you know that in the WHO Charter, David Martin's pointed this out in one of his many interviews, but in the WHO Charter, under Convention on Privileges and Immunities, Article 5, titled Representatives of Members, Section 14, it actually states, in order to secure for the representatives of members of the specialised agencies at meetings convened by them complete freedom of speech and complete independence in the discharge of their duties, the immunity from legal process in respect of words spoken or written and all acts done by them in discharging their duties shall continue to be accorded, notwithstanding that the persons concerned are no longer engaged in the discharge of such duties. So that's in perpetuity. That means they're not, even when they're not serving, they're still immune from any legal accountability.
Yeah.
I mean, that is.
So that means that all of those politicians, all of those people in who, Fauci, you know, Bloomfield, all of them who said safe and effective.
Yep.
Right? They can never be prosecuted.
No, that's right. They're immune.
Well, retrospective legislation would fix that.
Yeah.
Well,
or,
another
or
reason.
An angry mob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another reason why, you know, we're on the right track with this thing being lagged. I'm glad it has. So anyway, with regards to that thing, all I can say is what could possibly go wrong? All these people immune from legal proceedings.
And the pharmaceutical industry calling the shots about what should happen.
Yeah, because that applies to the funding agencies as well, like the Wellcome Trust, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, it applies
Helen
to them
Clark
too.
Clark Foundation.
They're specialised agencies in that legislation that also cannot be ever brought to account. So,
is it just me or does every time I see Bill Gates turn up, he just looks like a wizened up, like he's like Darth Sidious out of his suit.
Don't get Marty going on Bill Gates.
He's aging quickly, isn't he?
We'll get a mimic.
Oh. Mars attacks. All right. Should we leave that moving on? And J.K. Rowling, Lindsay mentioned her yesterday in his perspective.
Oh, good. I'm just so happy about this. I mean, it's rare that we see somebody with such an amazing platform actually rise to the standard of hero. And we are witnessing that. And it's so beautiful and also as rare as a unicorn. But on the occasion of Scotland's horrendous and fascistic Scottish Hate Crime Act, you know, to see someone as prominent as J.K. Rowling take such a heroic stand for free speech and reality is nothing short of beautiful. And then to see her long-form April Fool's tweet about male sex offenders who try to pass themselves off as women, very ugly women, I might add, which they clearly are not, it go absolutely viral with nearly 5 million views. It's just been such a blast of fresh air and the, I would call the malodorous miasmas of woke political insanity, which we've now gotten used to, sadly. My favourite line in her tweet was her taunt, which she meant, I'm currently out of the country, but if what I've written here qualifies as an offence under the terms of the new Act, I look forward to being arrested when I return to the birthplace of the Scottish Enlightenment. I mean, completely magnificent. And, of course, even more magnificent because she's not going to be arrested, because she's just too high profile, I believe, for them to take down. Even old fishy Rishi Sunak grew a pair for 5 minutes as he suddenly made a stand for free speech, saying, you know, people should not be criminalised for stating simple facts on biology. And conservatives will always protect free speech. That's a big humbug. If that were true, Samuel Melia would not be in prison for, you know, printing stickers. But, you know, this Hamza Youssef, the rather awful First Minister of Scotland and leader of the SNP, he's pushed this so hard. And the Act says that a person can be found guilty if they communicate material or behave in a way that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive with the intention of stirring up hatred based on these protected characteristics. The new Scottish law is said to set the bar very low as it intends. It also includes insulting behaviour and says prosecutors need only prove that stirring up hatred was likely instead of intended. So it is a very low bar.
Does anybody know the definition of the word hatred when they're talking here? Because that's a very,
well, it's very
subjective term.
It's so subjective. I mean, even those definitions that they're talking about there are so subjective. Like, how do you know what was in the person's mind when they put something on X, you know, posted it on X?
Yeah, were they actually hating? Were they?
Yeah. I mean, can you read minds?
The people who are pushing hate speech legislation, strangely, are the people who use hate speech more than anybody else. You know, in New Zealand in particular, the Green Party have been pushing hate speech legislation. I actually am disappointed that Labor never actually went through with it, because every time one of their crazy lunatic MPs would be saying something about cis white males or from the river to the sea or anything like that, we could just straight away slam them with hate speech legislation, and then would see very quickly how biased the whole thing is in the first place.
Do you think they have psychometric testing for their candidate selection?
Well, I think you just have to be able to rip off your workers and, you know, be a hypocrite and, you know, hide behind the shield of sanctimony.
Would only work in our favour, though, Cam, if we had an honest judiciary.
Well, we can't trust the Human Rights Commission either.
Which
Lindsay calls the Human Wrongs Commission.
Human Wrongs Commission. The other thing, too, is that with old Hamza Youssef, women are not included in the act. So Youssef says he wants to introduce another act for targeting misogyny. And that's when it will get really interesting, because the whole trans activist movement is so deeply misogynistic, really misogynistic.
It's a bunch of blokes telling women how they should think and feel and act, because that's what it is.
That interview that Jordan Peterson did was so on the money and interesting. I'd really recommend it. He was basically saying that these are just men with cluster B personality disorders, particularly narcissism, who've got auto-gyny philia, and that are turned on not only
that was a plan,
but they're women. But thinking they're attractive women, that's a big part of it. They've got to have people treating them like they're attractive women.
You make a good point there, because I saw they put up a picture, allegedly, of the person who came up with Transgender Day of Visibility.
Yeah, looked like
this ugly guy, you know.
Yeah, so that's hate speech. You're bursting her bubble.
Shove it in our face.
Condition.
Got the choice between getting their fetish pricked and burst, if the other choice is the person who's doing it is hateful and evil and wrong, a narcissistic personality is going to choose the second one every time. And so is a religious fanatic or an adherent of a totalitarian pedophile death cult. They hate you pointing that out.
I reckon the best debate I've seen on this is Ben Shapiro sitting there saying, well, yes, sir, okay, yes, sir, sir, I don't agree. This tranny decides he's going to try and beat Ben Shapiro up in the studio.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
And there's
that
the one with the guy with the sandwich board.
Yeah, he became a meme. It's ma'am.
It's ma'am.
It's ma'am. Whatever, sir.
Oh, Marty, honestly. Well, I'm going to wind that one up by saying, so Scotland has really gone to the dogs, and the Scottish Enlightenment is definitely dead in the heart of its birthplace. Maybe they need another John Knox, the fire-breathing Calvinist who founded the Presbyterian Church of Scotland during the Reformation, because the whole Scottish Enlightenment 200 years later was built around the Presbyterians and the Scottish Kirk, as they call it, who placed such a premium on education, literature, and empiricism, but not dancing. There's an old joke.
The quarters of William Wallace will be spinning in their various graves.
Well, that was sort of 1300s, I think, way back. But
William Wallace is in several graves.
But there's an old joke. Why do Calvinists not have sex standing up? Because it might lead to dancing.
Or prancing.
Okay, this is a very serious story, and we're Guy Hatchard on about this, and that is the teen who died, I think, 9 days after his COVID jab, heart failure in his sleep.
After a safe and effective COVID jab.
Yeah, well, I mean, it said he had a microscopic amount of myocarditis and a crucial part of his heart I would have thought it was all crucial.
Minimize.
Yeah, I asked a friend of mine who's a mandated out medical specialist about this one, and his short response was, it's outright lies. He said the incidences of myocarditis from vax and virus are widely different. There's no such thing as mild myocarditis. It's like being a little bit pregnant or slightly dead. But he said that in response to the part of the article which said it was also possible neither the viruses nor the vaccine had anything to do with his death, he said it's also possible, had they chosen to look with appropriate now available stains for mRNA or vax-induced spike protein in his heart, that they could have easily ruled conclusively one way or another on this. That's and I right. thought, I mean, those Elsa Harding's fantastic interview with Alison Goodwin had so many great insights into the corruption and holes in New Zealand's medical safety at the moment, didn't it? Just talking about all of these people who've died very close to getting vaxxed. And,
but that coroner could have – there was more information available easily to eliminate –
They're part of the system.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for an explanation. I know why. Mm. You know, that put their fingers in the ears and went la la la. Could have gone and found data very quickly here of vax versus non-vax myocarditis occurrences. Yeah. That would have given you a direction immediately.
But we see
it would have overwhelmed the other theory because that was so tentative. It was so inconclusive. He didn't even describe the virus particles that they found in his heart, weren't even described. So
No, so they said there were two viruses, but what were they?
Yeah, they haven't said what they are.
They could have come from the vaccine. I mean, the thing that's heartbreaking is it's enough to put maybe 70% of Kiwis off and think, oh, well, you know, and that's
they're
what
they're going to find out anyway.
But that's what they did. That is what they've done by forcing all of this on people. But there's still a disconnect. You know, just the other day, there was an article in Stuff about a woman who's terrible. She's got bowel cancer. It's terminal. She's got about 6 weeks to live. And she's quoting what her oncologist is saying, you know, that he's got another 22 patients just like this, and they've come out of nowhere. And
he's baffled,
They're baffled, doesn't know what's happening. They're all fit and healthy people, and all of a sudden they've got these terminal cancers. And I'm sitting there thinking, can they not see this? Like, why didn't they ask if every single one of those people, it was a simple question, were you vaccinated or were you not vaccinated?
You don't want to know.
Just ask.
I don't want to know.
I don't think they want to know because it's scary. And we're seeing this every week. There's somebody with some new cancer that's come out of nowhere. Every week in the paper, and they're usually saying, and this poor lady was saying, I want someone to do something. But sadly, no one will do anything because they won't ask the right questions.
And what can you do anyway?
Well, in this case, die.
Yeah. It's
shocking. Terrible. It's appalling.
Yeah, I mean, Alison was talking about a couple of cases. One was a lady who got encephalitis, and she was saying she was fit and healthy and there was nothing wrong with her. And a week after she had severe illness that put her in intensive care, every other cause was excluded, but they still can't tell you, yes, it was due to the vaccine. What on earth else was it due to? And she can't claim ACC because of that. Another 30-year-old man who died 3.5 weeks after the vax. This was not discussed at the meeting it was presented at. And again, she says, you know, if they didn't discuss a 30-year-old man who was previously healthy and died 3.5 weeks after being vaxxed, what are they looking at?
How many 13-year-olds get a small amount of myocarditis in their heart and die? How
all
many
13-year-olds?
All of it. It doesn't happen. 13-year-olds don't drop dead like instantaneously like that.
It's the universal deceit. And that's why we just keep having to do that revolutionary thing, as Orwell said, and that's keep telling the truth.
Yeah, sadly. Telling it sadly. It is what a terrible thing
it's
for
awful.
A parent to come into see is the 13-year-old kid dead in bed.
You'd have to consider, if you're the parent, that could be there could be a link. You would have to, wouldn't you?
Well, that's the thing is the parents, though, bought the lie that the politicians and the health officials told them that it's okay. It's safe and effective. It's no worries about it. Don't worry, nobody's died. Well, the dying started, but it's too late.
Yeah, it's a bit late after you die.
I've heard back channel from people who connected in the health system saying that there is an unusually large number of bowel obstruction cases.
Mm.
Do you mean growths?
I don't know what that means.
Just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, bowel obstruction.
Pure.
Whole lot of them.
Pure coincidence. We're dreaming.
Yeah, I mean, my dad grew a 6 kilo tumor in the year after he received his first vax.
6 kilo.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
And you know, he really struggled to get the doctors involved to submit a CALM report.
That's like the size of a haggis.
Yeah, it was quite something.
That's six things of butter.
He came very close to dying.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's 12 things of butter.
Yeah.
It's worse than that.
Well, it's more because butter's lighter than water.
Yeah.
Boy. But the thing is, the coronial system doesn't work, is what this tells us.
Yeah, the medical system needs to be dismantled and reassembled because it's failed so bad.
The coroner in this case is a nurse with a law background.
Well, that's not good enough, is it? I mean, you know, and I'll quote good old, and I know Alison Goodwin, she is a good stick. She is a lovely woman. And she's a woman with a lot of integrity. And it's easy to characterize people a certain way if you want to block out painful truths. But
well, they've treated her like a school kid.
What's that?
The medical council treated her like a school kid. She had to say disclaimers. She had to almost like struggle session every time. You know,
it's like 100 lines. She had to do apologizing. Like
100 lines. Yeah,
yeah. I'm so sorry.
They make you do that.
Yeah, she said the medical system does not receive the respect it once had because we didn't stand up and protect the patients and make sure they were fully informed and did our jobs analysing data and passing it on and defending their rights to refuse the treatment.
Yeah.
Well, my doctor did, and I can say that now out loud because he's retired. But my doctor did, he said to me, he rang me up and he said, Cam, we're just going through everybody, checking that they're going to get, if they're going to have their vaccinations, you're not going to have it, are you? And I said, not in a million years. And he says, oh, good. Well, that's it. I can tick that off the list. He didn't have to say it. Yeah. He didn't have to say it. But he was strongly suggesting. I mean, I'd had a stroke at that stage. I'd had shingles 2 years before that. Do you think I want to stick something in my arm that actually exacerbates shingles?
Yeah, and makes your body attack itself.
It's like that. There's another woman and stuff. I think it was 2 days ago, and she was, you know, showing photos of she had an ice bath, you know, because it's the latest health craze, you know, right? Sink yourself into a whole lot, you know, cold water, 4 degrees. It triggered the shingles vaccine right through her whole body, and she had a massive reaction to it. And she is showing these photos of you know, half of her body covered in shingles rashes.
Ooh, that would have smarted.
It's painful. I've had it before. Yeah, and my first wife left me. I got it.
That was because that was from relief.
I got it from too much relief.
I had shingles when I was 8 months pregnant with my last baby, across my belly. It was very
It's so painful, isn't it?
Well 2 years before my stroke, I had shingles, and it was wrapped around the nerves down one side, you know, in behind
the ear. On the inside?
On the inside, no rash at all. I was a whole month of January basically flat on my back with the curtains pulled, an air conditioning unit going, and on every type of morphine and pain relief and everything for a whole month.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's how painful. And, you know, they tell you out of one is the least painful and 10 is the most painful. What do you think you are? I said, 15?
I was going to say 11, but 15.
And I'm no sook, right? I've done some awful things to my body in the past and gone,
that's a whole show.
That smarted a bit, but that shingles wrapped around those nerves. Ooh, I've never
heard. Marty, can you beat any of those shingles stories?
I was just going to say, my name's Cam Slater. I collect firearms in unusual medical conditions.
And I've recovered.
Yeah.
As listeners will know, having listened to my interview with my 6-weekly update with Gary Moller, he was absolutely astonished at the transformation in the last 6 weeks by following his regime of supplements and super smoothies.
He astonished himself.
Well, you know, in the interview, he told me what he'd been up to for the last 6 weeks. I don't know if you guys know, there's the Karapoti Classic. It's a mountain bike race. It's the toughest race there is. He entered in the 70 to 80-year-old bracket because he's just a bit over 70. He broke the standing record by 40 minutes.
Oh, are you kidding me?
That's he's the first over 70-year-old to get under 3 hours. He's the first over 60-year-old to do it in under 3 hours.
He might be the fittest 70-year-old on the planet. Seriously.
I said, how did you go compared to the 60-year-old? 60-year-olds, he said, I beat them all. He's over 70. He looks like he's 50.
Yeah.
And he's a demon on a mountain bike, but he puts it all down to the super smoothies that he makes. And you can find it. Look it up. Google Gary Moller super smoothies.
I will, right after this.
I look forward to listening to the interview, Cam.
Do we make a comment before we're kind of off this about the 8,000? I think the Ministry of Health has admitted 8,000 medical staff were exempted.
Yeah, rules for thee, but not for me.
8,000, man.
Yep.
The same medical staff that were insisting that every single person who came into the hospital wore a mask, was vaccinated, and everything vaccinated. Else. It wouldn't give people operations unless they were vaccinated. These are the same people, hypocrites.
Yeah, the same people.
So it wasn't the Hippocratic Oath, it was the Hypocrite Oath.
The medical system does not deserve the respect it once had.
No, it does not. I've got such huge issues with the medical profession now. I just do not trust them. And I'm sure there are good doctors in there scattered around. But my view is that all the really good ones, the really ethical ones, quit or were deregistered.
But this is the sad thing, right? Look at the last 5 years. And let's start listing, you know, professions that are always surveyed by Reader's Digest and the most trusted professions. Doctors, yeah, not so much. Police, definitely not. You know, I'm a firearms owner. We're supposed to be mates with the police. I won't do anything to help them anymore, the way they've treated me. And you look at all of these, you know, I think most of those professions will be down, you know, somewhere around the politicians at the bottom. Now, people just don't trust them anymore.
Yeah, wokeness has absolutely poisoned everything. Christopher Hitchens wrote the wrong book when he said it was God. It's wokeness.
Well, it's a religion, isn't it? Anyway,
it is. It's the most.
That and climatism is.
It's the most pernicious religion in the world now, is woke.
After climate change.
This is a political panel. I don't hear any politicians making mention of any of these issues that we're talking about today. Well, maybe Cuthbert's college principal overseeing charter school revival. Maybe they've got something to say about that. But
oh, the unions will kick up Bobsy Dye. The last thing they want is their monopoly on teaching challenged.
Yeah, it's amazing that they got away with just canning it the way they did on the first day. Oh, Chris Hipkins again, his little ratty blinking eyes.
Yeah, education minister.
Yeah.
You look at all the things that we've lost trust in. We've lost trust in our teachers. We've lost trust in our health professionals. We've lost trust in the police. Now, who was the minister that made all these decisions? Who was the education minister that cancelled charter schools? Oh, that was Chris Hipkins. Who was the health minister that oversaw the degradation of the health system? Oh, it was Chris Hipkins again. Who was the police minister who before Ginny Anderson took the dud pass? It was Chris Hipkins. He's the sole person who's been in charge of those for the majority of the last 6 years. And there he is sitting there with his bobblehead, open mouth, catching flies, going on about how grand he was as Prime Minister and how grand he was and all the achievements he did. You know, Chris,
got Hyde.
We kept the receipts, Chris, and now we're going to show them to you.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that that phased, but yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
The cancellation of the charter schools really, well, again, it's that thing of 70% of Kiwis. Oh yeah, well, it doesn't faze them, and that's a problem. And it comes down to the education system being not fit for purpose. It doesn't teach people to think critically. But I think, you know, with the charter schools and the fixation on equity. Old Jan Tinetti mentioned equity.
Ex-principal.
Yeah, she said, former education minister admitted the education system had struggled under historical changes, but believed adding chartered schools would only deepen inequities between schools
and undervalue
the state system.
Yeah, show them up, yeah.
It'll show them up.
It's the price of fossil fuels that we never talk about. We always talk about the environmental cost. The real cost is the waste of human excellence.
Exactly, and I talked about this last evening on my show with Elwin Paul. And he's telling me, you know, he had a school in South Auckland that had a 95% attendance rate. The other schools in the area have had under 40% attendance rates. He talked about the success rate of his schools in those low decile areas where they were getting 90% passing their NCEA compared to one school that's in the same catchment area. That had 1%. 1% of their students passed NCEA level one.
Oh my goodness.
That's the difference between charter schools and state schools. And so when you hear the unions and Jan Tinetti and all of these people that are railing against charter schools, what they really are railing against is having their failings of 40, 50 years of the education system sliding towards cultural Marxism. That are failing the youth of our society. Is it any wonder we've got little scumbags out roaming the streets and robbing stores and doing ram raids and things like that? They don't go to school, so they're committing crime.
Idle hands.
Yeah.
Also, just the cost of letting those bright kids in some of those poorer neighbourhoods, the really genius kids, letting them just be bored out of the education system.
Mm.
There's a huge cost of that. And we've been able to afford it because food's been abundant, energy's been abundant. So we've been able to have leaders that you'd never, ever choose in a survival situation. Grant Robertson. Can you imagine having him as a leader in any sort of survival situation?
No, but also, Marty, I think Ayn Rand said, you don't judge a civilization by how you treat its most vulnerable. You treat it, you judge it by how it treats its most gifted, which is quite a flip to common thinking. And there's really something in that, because it's the gifted kids that really fall through the cracks often.
And that's, again, what I talked about with Elwin Paul last night, right? The education system is predicated around this fanciful idea that there's a bell-shaped curve. And at either end, the extreme dullards and the extremely bright are left out of the education system, who have the same challenges for learning and teaching. And the entire education system is focused around this apparent vast majority that sit in this massive bell shape. And so if you're really bright at school, and you know, I can put my hand up and say, you know, I was in the top classes at my school, and I was left to my own devices because school was boring. Like, it was like, and so we caused trouble.
Yeah, and you don't learn to study either, because you just breeze through.
Yeah.
So you're not challenged, so you don't learn to study.
Yeah, what I learned was that 51% is a pass, 50% is a close-run thing, and 49% is a waste of a year.
Mm. Yeah.
What about the money that feeds in through subs from the teacher unions to, well, the Labor Party? That would have something to do with it, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure the NZDI and the PPTA are affiliated unions with the Labor Party.
Well, even persuading your members to vote for you is kind of making a deal.
They do seem to be hand in glove. I mean, while Labor were in power, the most numerous profession was teacher.
That's right.
Well, NZDI is 50,000 members.
Mm.
That could swing an election.
That's 50,000 members. That covers early childhood education and primary schools. 50,000.
Yeah.
The PPTA, that's, let's see how many members they've got. They've 21,000. So there's 71,000 union members of teachers who have a vested interest in not having any competition to show up how poor they are at teaching kids.
Well, there's that Māori proverb as well, that the food of chiefs is conversation. The food of the tutua inattention. So there's this kind of tradition of having the dumb commoners. And that kind of explains, in a way, why you don't hear Māori leaders getting as angry as they should be about the failure of Māori kids by the education system.
It's institutional racism, colonialism.
It outrages me. Because you do, I mean, you know, you talk to young kids and they're bright, and you just, if you're around them for a bit, you can gradually see the fire go out in their eyes.
Yeah.
Such a waste.
All right, we're coming up on time. Let's finish off on the real risk of dying from COVID.
Linda Wharton put up a really good tweet, X, with a link to an actual study called "This Was Your Real Risk of Dying from COVID for All Ages 0 to 69. And one of the authors of that study is John P.A. Ioannidis, who I really like, who was the first professor to be viciously censored and attacked when he wrote in March 2020 that lockdowns were not the answer and could do more harm than the virus itself. And he got savaged for that. So he and some other authors have done this huge in-depth study on exactly the objective of the study was to accurately estimate the infection fatality rate in non-elderly people before so-called vaccination and before a COVID infection. And so the data was collected, all of it, prior to February 2021. And was from a fully unvaccinated cohort. So that was during the alpha wave, which was meant to be the most lethal, and nobody was vaccinated. One of the reasons the study is so valuable is because, as the study says in its abstract, these estimates provide a baseline from which to fathom further infection fatality rates declines with the widespread use of vaccination, prior infections, and evolution of new variants. So it was using 29 countries' publicly available age-stratified COVID death data and age-stratified seroprevalence information, which, of course, is the blood work. And they were made available and were included in the primary analysis. So the calculations were 0 to 19 years, 0.0003%, 20 to 29 years, 0.002%, 30 to 39 years, 0.011%, 40 to 49, 0.035%, and 50 to 59 years, 0.123, and 60 to 69 years, 0.506%.
So 3/5 of 5/8 of stuffle.
Yeah.
And not near the 1.1% rate of serious side effects from the vaccine?
No, nowhere near that. And remember, they all said 3 to 4%. Imperial College said 3 to 4% when the panic ensued. So at the end of the study, the authors state the relative contributions of vaccination, prior infection, and new variants in the infection fatality rate decline needs careful study and continued monitoring. However, it is reassuring that even in the wild strains that dominated the first year of the pandemic, the IFR in non-elderly individuals was much lower than previously thought. So taking all this into consideration, New Zealand's lockdown was completely not needed, and the mass injection of our population, including the young, including the pregnant and the middle-aged, was totally unnecessary to prevent death. Of course, many of us knew this already. I read Professor Ioannidis' article that he wrote in March of 2020, the one for which he was so savaged. And in that, he analysed the stats of the Diamond Princess cruise ship, which was all elderly people with multiple comorbidities. And out of the 740-odd passengers on board, 7 died, which showed that a 1% infection fatality rate in the most highly vulnerable population, the over 70s, and that stat was similar to seasonal flu in most years. I mean, we know flu can always kill the elderly and the very weakened. So, I mean, very good study, but What a waste of time all this was.
Maybe Helen Clark was right. Getting the new rules around the global response to pandemic threats is vital if we want to avoid the COVID-19 type catastrophe again. Maybe just not the way she thinks.
You needed the Darth Vader.
I thought that was pretty good, actually.
It's when she says...
I've met her in person. She's a lot sexier in person than she is on TV. Beautiful eyes.
Good skin.
Yeah.
Growing up on a farm.
Yeah. You've got it confused with Margaret Thatcher. She had beautiful eyes and beautiful skin.
Oh, you can like both, Olivia.
Ooh. All right. Well, I think we've come up against time. The original crew on the political panel for this Friday. We'll do it again next Friday. Any last words?
It's always a blast. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. None from me.
Thanks, Paul. Awesome. Carry on.
Okay, then with your permission, I will.
Keep up the good work.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.